Can you imagine feeling perfect in your own body, able to eat whatever you want without worrying about how it'll make you look? For some, this comes easily, but for others, it can be a struggle. In the new book, What's Eating Us? Women, Food, and the Epidemic of Body Anxiety, author Cole Kasdan examines the unhealthy relationship some women have with their diet and appearance, and offers helpful advice for a way out. Cole is an Emmy Award-winning television journalist and has written for the New York Times, the LA Times, Los Angeles Magazine, Cosmopolitan, and the Daily Beast. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, I'm Cole Kasdan, author of What's Eating Us? Women, Food, and the Epidemic of Body Anxiety. I'm a journalist living in Los Angeles and an eating disorder survivor myself. I want to share five of the key insights from my book, some of which even surprised me as I was investigating and writing. Insight number one, we are living in the midst of a deadly eating disorder crisis. Eating disorders in the U.S. have among the highest mortality rate of any mental illness. It's on par with the opioid crisis, which surprised me when I started researching my book, because we certainly don't talk about eating disorders as a crisis the same way we talk about opioid overdose. About 30 million Americans will have an eating disorder in their lifetime. Most people are familiar with anorexia, which involves, among other things, extreme food restriction and starving, or bulimia, binging food and purging. But most people who have eating disorders don't fall into a neat diagnostic category. They may be somewhere else along the continuum of harmful behaviors around food and still at just as high a risk for life-threatening health complications. During the pandemic, the number of people with eating disorders skyrocketed, especially teenagers, and the already strained mental health care system is not equipped to handle it. Insight number two, there is no standard of care. I kept double-checking this one when I was researching my book, re-asking the top experts in the country to repeat it. There is really no standard of care for eating disorders? And they were happy to say it back. There is no standard of care. What this means is there's no accepted, agreed-upon, proper treatment for eating disorders the way there is for other conditions. For example, if a person is diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, there are medications. For some, insulin. A doctor may prescribe lifestyle changes like increasing physical activity. I can't imagine a universe where someone is diagnosed with diabetes or schizophrenia or any one of a number of conditions and a doctor tells them to ride horses, paint watercolors, or practice some therapy that they themselves invented and was never researched in large studies to see if it actually works. But this is exactly what happens with eating disorders all the time. It's the Wild West. And part of it is because not only is the field not well regulated, it's primarily for profit. It's not that promising evidence-based therapies don't exist. They're out there, but the onus is on the patient to track them down and to vet, to do the research, evaluate, and in many cases, of course, pay for it out of pocket. Insight number three, we are all swimming in diet culture. Diet culture is in the air we breathe. Reminders that we're not thin enough or toned enough or healthy enough are everywhere, and we barely notice half of them. Ads on the radio, social media, labels on food in the grocery store. I've even seen low-carb cat food at pet stores. I asked our veterinarian about it. Would that be good for Isabella, our cuddly black rescue cat? Or is that just something because people in general are afraid of carbs now? Yeah, the vet shook his head. Cats don't need to watch carbs. The ubiquity of these messages may not even matter since most of us have internalized it all anyway. And so many behaviors that are genuinely harmful to the body have been rebranded when we weren't looking. Maybe we were exhausted from lack of carbs and didn't notice. Fasting and intermittent fasting are what we used to call skipping meals and starving. Detox tea has replaced diuretics, even though they're pretty much the same thing. Cheat day is a binge. The words health and weight have somehow become synonyms. Getting healthy has become code for losing weight. But restricting food, limiting our calories, has nothing to do with health. In fact, dieting may increase the risk of developing an eating disorder, according to one of the largest studies on the subject. Insight number 4, recovery is possible. There were so many times when I questioned for myself whether full recovery was even possible. Part of my motivation setting out to write this book was to see if anyone had figured it out. As I started interviewing people doing incredible work, a crack of hope opened. I found brilliant researchers at leading institutions who were somehow as vexed as I was at the absence of a standard of care, and who were working tirelessly to develop one. And I found communities of women who were on the other side of their own eating disorders, who were now making it their mission to not only create awareness, but to help people who weren't getting proper care. As I educated myself and experimented with new tools, I began to notice something during the off hours when I wasn't researching the book, a slow shedding of obsession. Waking one morning as I made coffee and prepared for work, I realized I hadn't awoken with an anxious daily analysis of the prior day's eating and exercise, nor that of the day ahead. That's interesting, I thought. I learned new skills to manage my anxiety, which for me is directly connected to my eating disorder. Recovery isn't a straight line. It can look different for each person, and it can take a long time, but it can absolutely happen. Insight number 5. Build community. Building community is how we maintain recovery. It's really hard to do without other people. It doesn't mean you need to belong to some special group. It could be one other person, a friend, a partner, a family member, clergy. It could be a group you find on social media. And it doesn't even have to be a special eating disorder recovery group, though that can be helpful, especially as we untangle and unprogram all of the habits that we may have accumulated over the years about food and about our bodies, because that causes stress. And it's easy to underestimate the mental toll of even the most seemingly innocuous food rules we make for ourselves. If we think of stress as sort of a fifth food group in terms of what we regulate for our health, it could serve us well. One researcher I spoke with told me that if he had to pick one thing that we could do to improve our immune health, it wouldn't be changing the way we eat or even adding physical activity. It would be finding new ways to manage stress. And finding other people to support us in that, and people that we can offer support to, makes all the difference in the world. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Cole. That was Cole Kasdan with 5 big ideas from What's Eating Us? Women, Food, and the Epidemic of Body Anxiety. I'm Caleb Bissinger. Thanks for listening.